This is the October 28th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Aaron Curtis is here from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. And Ellen Dearden joins us from AgReview in Morton, Illinois. Our special guest for the day is Jordan Fife. He's at BioUrgia out of Houston, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, WILLAG.org. Let's start, Jordan Fife, with you from BioUrgia. You've been on our program before, but why don't you remind us just a bit about the company BioUrgia and what it does?
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I appreciate you having me on. I'm Jordan Fife, president of BioUrgia Trading. We are a commodities trade company out of Houston, Texas. As Todd said, we trade ethanol, grains, gasoline, diesel, metals, and power.
And you have the company that is has recently purchased or in the process of purchasing the ADM ethanol plant in Peoria. Can you broadly tell me why that's the case?
Absolutely. So we are in the process of closing, as you mentioned. We are looking at this asset long term in terms of hand sanitizer, industrial use, beverage grade, and of course, a bit of fuel ethanol.
And the plant itself, if I remember correctly, can be operated either as food grade, those things that you talked about, or an ethanol production facility. But apparently you're thinking the food grade side will be more profitable.
Yes, we think that going forward, the industrial uses and beverage grade never goes out of style. But it will be producing some fuel grade ethanol. It's on the Illinois River, for those people that don't know. It's got access to all Class 1 railroads. And so we feel like we have a logistical advantage there in making both food and fuel grade and industrial grade ethanol and shipping it down the Illinois River and all across the United States and looking at export opportunities as well.
I will let the other folks ask some questions here in just a moment, but I do want to give you one other question to get us started. Because you follow the price of crude oil in your business so very closely as it relates to ethanol production, I'm wondering, at the current price of crude oil, do you see a higher correlation with the price of corn as crude moves upward?
Yes, is the answer to that question. And if you run the correlation of WTI, West Texas Intermediate, to the top 30 commodities on the board, it roughly correlates, obviously, number one to Brent. And Brent is the North Sea. And then the number two thing that it correlates to is heating oil. That makes sense, right? And number three being gasoline. But again, if you go all the way to, you can run every commodity that's listed. Beans are number 12, wheat is 13, and corn is actually 19. So there is a pretty strong correlation. As a matter of fact, it correlates about 36% to soybeans, 32% to wheat, and 28% to corn. And if you think about why that is, it makes sense, right? You need gasoline, you need diesel, you need all those things to harvest crops. And then obviously another big component of ethanol is natural gas. Natural gas represents about 30 to 35% of the operating expense for any given ethanol plant. And if you look at a chart of natural gas, it's been $2 to $3 for years and years and years. So a very low part of the operating expense would be natural gas. However, if you look at the chart now, it's $6 plus. So as crude continues to go up, it's going to relate to ethanol. It's going to relate, of course, then to corn. All these things are very closely related. And I think as you move forward, my personal view, not a view of the company, is that we're going to be north of 80, possibly reach 100 on crude. And that will correlate to the price of corn. Obviously, we're at multi-year highs there. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
Matt Bennett, you have a question for Jordan Fife?
Yeah, Jordan, good to have you on here. Margins have obviously been pretty robust for the ethanol grind. And so Moving forward, you know, the USDA is currently at that 5.2 level. How quickly do you expect some sort of an adjustment here? I'm not trying to ask you to peer into the lens of what USDA might do, I guess, but where are you at? You know, how long do you think these margins are going to stay this way? I know you said you didn't think that they were going to change anytime soon, but one has to assume with the kind of grind we're seeing over the last couple of weeks, you know, the second highest this week, I think, that we've ever seen, one has to assume that we're going to end up going past that 5.2 by a fair margin. Where would you handicap the ethanol grind at right now?
So I agree with you completely. I think the USDA is low. You know, if you extrapolate that 5.2 of what it means to the grind, they're well under. How fast they change it, well, that's anyone's guess what the USDA does and why they do it and when they do it. But I think that it should be closer to at minimum 5.3, but I could be talked into 5.4, even 5.5. That should be where we're at. As far as margins go, yes, I don't think it's changing anytime soon. The major pricing hubs of America, which are Chicago and New York Harbor, are extremely low on their inventory. And when I say extremely low, Chicago, Argo, is like below 15% total inventory. And they have giant tanks there. And to be that low takes time to recover. And you have what's known as Rule 11, which is when you ship something over Chicago. I know the grain folks obviously know about it, but for ethanol's purpose, you ship it over Chicago and then you ship it east. The bid for that is extremely high. And the issue there is if that's high, that will draw cars away from Chicago. You need cars to be replenishing inventory in Chicago as we speak. You also have barges coming out of Chicago that go down the river, you know, as far as New Orleans. So you've got kind of a double-edged sword right now where we're not getting enough cars to Chicago to replenish the inventory. And at the same time, you have other competing factors in the market that are drawing cars away from Argo. So that should keep the margins elevated. But to your earlier point, with a grind of, you know, 1,100 plus, eventually the demand will slow down. We're seeing great demand right now for gasoline, no surprise. Now that we're, you know, the post-COVID era, if you will. People are still moving around plenty. Once we get past Thanksgiving, though, it gets colder. We're going to see a drop in demand. If we're still anywhere near that 1,100, the market doesn't correct, you'll start to see those margins come back off.
Aaron Curtis, you have a question?
Yeah, Jordan, talking about near term, but what thoughts longer term as we move continued, you know, a lot of debate right on the RFS and those kind of things, electric vehicles. I mean, how do you see that moving forward in terms of what could potential be an effect on ethanol demand, both on the electric side and both on just the government trying to get in the way here a little bit?
Yeah, so I'll tackle the RFS part first. I'm of the belief that you'll never undo the RFS. The knot's tied too much right now. It's too hard to undo. You know, you can look at the government right or left. I'm politically agnostic myself, so I'm not trying to take a side here. But it's very hard to get things passed through the House these days and then to the White House. So I don't think anything will ever be done to reverse the RFS. That being said, I do believe that there could be some adjustments. And specifically, you're seeing a lot of growth in the renewable diesel space. You could have an adjustment where you could look at why RFS was created and the way the path that they saw it forward. And they saw like a less dependency on corn-based ethanol and everything like that. They wanted more cellulosic and everything and those type of programs. But we never got cellulosic off the ground, and it's kind of a pipe dream at this point. But the renewable diesel does add a layer of complexity there where they could kind of rearrange the buckets for the RIN compliance, for the RVO, and especially with who's getting involved with renewable diesel. It's the P66s, the Valeros. These are oil majors. And so with them putting as much money into renewable diesel space as they have lobbyists, they could easily move the buckets of where the RINs fall. And what that will do is eventually just say, hey, look, we've hit a blend wall on corn-based ethanol. We'll keep it at 15 million and we won't touch that. And therefore, we're going to allocate some more of the buckets to renewable diesel and stuff like that, which is not an insanely bearish thing. Ethanol has now carved out its piece. And so I don't think it'll affect it that much. As far as electric vehicles go, the saturation continues at kind of a drip and a drab. But we have a power trading desk, as I mentioned earlier. And the more and more I learn about power, the more and more I'm terrified of power. I live in Texas, where it got cold for 3 days and we lost power for weeks. And the same thing is true for California. If it gets too hot there, they lose power for weeks. The power grid needs massive upgrading to support the amount of electric vehicles that if you wanted to replace it, even to like 25-30% of the fleet of the United States. Electric vehicles are certainly here to stay. They're not going to go away. But I think we're putting the cart ahead of the horse big way by thinking we're going to be carbon neutral in the next 10 years or 15 years or something like that. I don't think it's going to happen. Furthermore, when you look at ethanol and you look at where it's headed and you look at things like renewable diesel, which is very good for the farmer as well because it's made out of soybean oil, it's made out of corn oil and fats, right? When you look at that, and look at the carbon intensity of these things, once you start getting like things like carbon sequestration involved, it is actually less carbon intense than a Tesla. You have to mine, you know, for metals and things like that. You're doing it in Africa and places like that. It's not in our backyard, but that's not good for the environment. Then you have to run a power plant to produce it. Those are running on natural gas. So when you get carbon sequestration and you're now running off of a renewable energy source like corn and like soybeans, there's going to be a debate up there, which is really better for the environment. I'm not saying it's all the cards are stacked in ethanol and renewable diesel, but there is a path forward where we are actually better off doing renewable diesel and ethanol than having electric vehicles.
Ellen Dearden, a question.
I do, and I'm going to come from a completely different angle because I really want to pursue the acquisition of the Peoria ADM plant. Probably the only farmer in this group that actually delivers corn into that facility on a regular basis. So speaking from that angle, do you see big changes coming? Will the facility remain open on a day-to-day basis? Do you see the philosophy of the operation changing for very much? And from a basis standpoint, ADM Peoria has been the best basis on the Illinois River north of Havana. Will that, you expect that's going to be changed or will that remain intact?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you delivered to the facility. We look forward to having you as a customer. Second, the philosophy will change, and I can't get too deeply into the plans we have. For obvious reasons, but there will be some improvements. I'll put it that way. It's a very old plant. It needs some upgrades that we are laying out the capital to do. It will be open on a day-to-day basis. It's having it shut down, I believe, starting this tomorrow. It's either tomorrow or Monday. And then it comes out of its shutdown, and then it'll be open and running for business 24 hours a day, making food-grade, beverage-grade, industrial-grade, and fuel-grade ethanol. As far as the basis goes, we're going to probably be employing a different procurement strategy than ADM. We're not as big as ADM. ADM has their own elevators. We do not. We'll be potentially going more farmer direct, which we look forward to making those relationships and being a reliable buyer of corn for the good folks of Illinois.
Jordan, you're looking at, for instance, demand's been pretty strong, as you suggest. Obviously, ethanol grind could be corn uses for ethanol could be quite a bit more than what we're currently looking at. So balance sheet could obviously tighten. You're looking at this 22 market, and we pushed over 550. Obviously, a lot of questions with inputs. What is your guys' thought process on what kind of acreage it's going to take to satisfy corn demand out of 22, because personally, I've got some question marks as to where I think acreage might land, especially looking at what the weather looks like here this fall, and the obvious issues we have with getting, for instance, anhydrous ammonia availability, cost of inputs, just a lot going on that causes me a pause to think that the acreage isn't going to be what the trade is looking for. But what kind of numbers are you guys looking at currently?
So that's a great question. I think you have to go back to pre-COVID. If we're going to keep grinding like this, we're going to be, in that 1050, 1060 kind of range, which was kind of the pre-COVID numbers. And I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, to be perfectly honest. But if you go back to like a 2018, we would need something. If you know the 2018 number, please let me know. I just don't have that number off the top of my head, but it would need to be something closer to that. And I know ADM just came out the other day and said that they think it's a toss-up on acreage between soy and corn. And that goes back to the earlier point I made about renewable diesel. Crushing plants are popping up everywhere right now. You know, that's not news to anybody on the call or anybody listening. And that because we need more soybean oil to satisfy all the demand we're going to have for renewable diesel. So now you have a competing feedstock. Before, biodiesel was, you know, it was a great product, but renewable diesel, you know, when you break it down, the molecule is diesel at the end of the day. And to add on top of that, ADM just announced that they were working with Gevo to turn both Cedar Rapids dry and Columbus dry into renewable jet fuel. So that's going to take a lot of soybean crushing. So to me, it's not about the grind on just ethanol. It really comes down to the push and the pull of ethanol and soybean oil are going to compete for acres, which could drastically change the landscape of planting, right? In a way we've never seen or really thought of. These plants are coming on, the renewable diesel plants, you know, in the next year and a half or two. I know Rodeo in California for P66 will be the largest. Every refiner that's got a hydrotreater is looking to do renewable diesel as fast as they can. And as I mentioned, you know, ADM is going to turn 200-300 million to 600 million gallons of ethanol production into renewable jet fuel. You can do it with corn. Or you can do it with soybean oil, potentially. I don't know what their plans are. I don't work for ADM. But the point is, we're going to have a battle for beans and corn that's far different from any year we've ever seen.
How many acres do you think?
That, I you know, I haven't done the math, to be perfectly honest. I don't want to pull one out and sound silly, so I'd have to actually go crunch the numbers on that one.
Hey, Jordan, in 2018, we were not 89 and 89 in 2018.
And what do we have predicted for this year?
This year we planted 93.3 and 87.2.
See, so we could have a reduction then, potentially. I really think the corn acres will go down some, and for reasons I just stated, because we're going to have so much soybean oil needed. There's just a, I think last time I was on, I said, you know, there's going to be a sucking sound for oil and fats. And that sound has only gotten louder. As more and more of these projects get announced, you know, ADM's making that crushing plant in North Dakota, I believe. You're going to need to feed that beast, and they're going to be a bid every single day. And like I said with Rodeo, they're going to need oil every single day to run that facility. It's just a completely different animal than 6-7 months ago, and especially 2-3 years ago.
As of recent years, it's been combined about 180 million acres year in and year out of corn and soybeans, but they and there is some finagle one side or the other, but the two usually add up to about that. I do have a question for you, Ellen Dearden. If what Jordan is talking about comes to fruition, the crush or the meal part is going to be overwhelmed, I would think, with availability. And I don't know what that'll do to the price of soybean as the input.
Well, we've seen a pretty big break in the meal price while the bean oil kind of held steady and then has just recently worked lower with the global vegetable oil price going down. I think it kind of puts a lid on the bean rally potentials unless we would see a huge drop in acres or something in the U.S. or a big problem in South America, and that doesn't look to be the case. I think from a technical standpoint, the beans look a little shaky.
And how about corn from the tech side?
We're going to have a second higher monthly close, second higher in a row. Monthly close in corn, and you know, we saw a breakout above that 550 level, both on the nearby and also on the new crop. So that looks a little better. We're above all the key moving averages. We saw funds buying all week long. I think you have to be encouraged by the looks of the corn chart, and just as much as you're kind of discouraged that beans can't see much action at all, we'll be down probably 20 cents for the month in the beans.
Aaron Curtis, across the cash grain segment, what do the fundamentals tell you about the availability and use and demand for the crops this year?
Well, if you look at the processor side, with what Jordan was talking about, ethanol margins, bean crush margins are pretty warm to hot right now, so that continues to support corn and bean basis across the Midwest. And a function of that, of course, is the rainy weather that we've had, and we just can't get harvest going again. We've got quite a few beans out around the Midwest that just can't go, and it's going to be slow going even if we get back in the field here in November. So just not going to be able to cut a lot of beans on any given day here into November. So, you know, we went from starting in mid-September to thinking we'll be done by Halloween to now we're hoping to be done by Thanksgiving through parts of Illinois, and you get out to Indiana, Ohio, and it's even worse. I mean, just tons of water setting out there and more rain coming today and tomorrow. So it's really kind of a tough situation, but hopefully November does work out a little better. The river continues to be somewhat weak for this month just due to barge freight continuing to be pretty stout. It has come off its highs, but still trading in that 525 to 550% level. So that continues to keep the nearby river value somewhat weak. But overall processor values, a couple things, Todd, really is the fact that, you know, for most part, elevator space was pretty empty going into harvest. So space hasn't really been an issue. The exception would probably be southern Illinois, where the yields are just outstanding. The rain has helped them out a little bit in terms of getting the crop put away. But most areas just haven't had much concern with space. So that continues to help basis be somewhat supported. And then, you know, truck availability is just pretty poor, Todd, just in terms of being able to get grain moved. And we've seen some processors have to perk up bids to try to get the attention of both the farmer and the elevator to try to move stuff. And I think that truck issue is going to continue to hang over, you know, basis and offer some support more than anything. Probably going to be an issue here as we move through the winter months, because truck driver availability is pretty poor and looks to continue.
So your point there is they'll have to pay a higher price for the corn in order to pay a higher price for to move a bushel of corn?
Yeah, so, you know, when you get the logistics get pretty tight, and we saw that in that Peoria, Pekin area here just 2 or 3 weeks ago, when they just couldn't, even when we were in the middle of harvest, bidding up for corn just because trucks weren't available. Either tied up on the farm or tied up moving other products or already existing corn and soybean commitments. So basis has to firm up a little bit to try to get some things to move to get some more attention. And I think those nearby premiums, as we've seen, are probably going to continue to carry forward here as we move through the next few weeks.
And Matt, for the 2021 crop, you think corn is the stronger of the two?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from my vantage point, whenever you're looking at 2021, it sure doesn't look to me like this corn crop is going to grow much more. I mean, for me, you know, whenever you look, for instance, we came up two reports in a row. So the trend typically is that you're going to continue to grow the corn crop. But it sure seems to me that just the reports that you hear from producers throughout the Corn Belt, it's more of a mixed bag. Whenever you talk about corn, yes, there's some areas like Aaron suggested in southern Illinois where, you know, much better than even expected, and expected was going to be pretty good. Whereas there's some areas in other parts, even of the state of Illinois, like for instance, parts of western Illinois, where we were significantly below. I just think there's a lot of mixed reports on corn, whereas the soybean yield seemed to come in very stout. Now, I'll tell you, we just had to put together, you know, our estimates for, you know, for this next report for Reuters. And I tell you, whenever we talked about it, I think everybody on my team kind of felt like we had a record soybean crop. But then all this wet weather, I mean, we can't discount that we're probably robbing a bushel or so or two in some of these areas. Now, nationally, yeah, you're not going to rob a bushel. But can I go ahead and go up from the 51.5 to a 52-plus type yield with all the question marks we've got with getting this harvest put to rest? And I don't know that I can do that right now. I do think that the bean crop is very large. And yes, crush margins make good, so crush could maybe be increased a little bit. But I still look for your carryout on beans to be somewhere in that 350 range. And on corn, I look for the carryout to start dwindling from 1.5. So to me, corn, relatively speaking, is the stronger of the two.
And Jordan, if I could get you to tell me about the difference between your thoughts on the 2021 crop and the 2022 year and the acreage battle we've discussed already.
Yeah, you know, to me, it really comes down to which is going to win out, you know, the ethanol grind or the soybean grind there. I tend to lean towards corn because it's a known commodity. There's so much unknown in renewable diesel and renewable jet fuel. It's going to come online fast. So I lean towards corn in 2022. And obviously in 2021, it's going to be the corn grind will be much higher for ethanol than for renewable diesel. But I cannot overstate how much of an impact I do believe it's going to happen in 2022 as more and more of this comes online and starts just taking more and more fats and oils.
And I think Aaron, maybe you and Jordan both, and I gave Jordan a heads up on this one as it relates to a recent time when we saw the price of crude oil spike above $80, and then the Bakken came on, and about this time of year, in fact, and we just didn't have availability of locomotives, and rig counts went up just vastly across the United States. And Jordan, I know I asked you to take a look at some of that stuff. Do we know how many locomotives are in play and whether this kind of issue that showed up in, I don't remember which winter that was, where corn had an issue simply because we couldn't get rail car or locomotives to move rail cars and that weighed on the market all winter long?
Yeah. So if you go back to 2015, that was the peak of the Bakken, the Permian, and all that, and the BNSF staffed up huge. It went out and bought 500 locomotives. They hired 6,000 workers. They hired 4,600 employees. They hired 6,000 workers. And then a year later, in 2016, they laid 4,600 of those employees off as the price of oil just completely decreased. They then started retiring locomotives and everything like that. So we had a huge boom in 2015. Like I said, the BN was, they built a 164,000 square foot facility to house their new employees in Dallas. It was like $30 million or something like that. And at that point in 2015, crude oil represented 63% of the growth of the BNSF. Then the price of crude went dramatically down. Pipelines came online. People stopped moving crude by rail dramatic fold. They went, I think it was, I want to say they were moving about 700,000 barrels of crude per day. And that's come all the way down to like, I want to say 30, excuse me, they were moving 300,000 barrels a month, and it's come down to 70,000 barrels a month. So it's decreased dramatically as the pipelines came on. The reason that's important is because when they slashed all of those workers and then they slashed all of those locomotives after they ramped up, they've never really rebuilt the staff in a meaningful way. And then COVID happened, and then they laid more people off. And they've definitely, and not just the BN, the UP, the CSX, the NS, every Class 1 railroad has happened. We've seen turn times decrease. We've seen service decrease. We've seen huge logistical spikes on multiple commodities that we look at as a result, ethanol being a great example. The New York Harbor 3 weeks ago spiked 50 cents in 2 days because we were just not getting switches. It was a short line at the New York Harbor that was literally just not able to pick up the unit trains. The unit trains were less than a mile away from the offload facility in the New York Harbor. And the short line just said, we don't have the staff. So we're seeing this, and this is not just ags. This is, you know, the global supply chain. We're seeing it, you know, in California where they can't unload container ships. We're seeing it with crude oil in places like Houston. But the railroad is not exempt from that. So that will, I believe, affect corn, soybean, anything that moves by rail, and it will continue to do so. It's hard to staff. It's hard to keep people employed. We're retiring people that are currently working. You know, as years and days go by, people get older, they retire, and we're not replenishing it. And I don't know who said it earlier, but trucking is equally, if not a bigger issue, which could also affect the price of everything that moves by truck, which is literally every commodity in the world. Basically, you're going to see an increase in price and inflation, which we are all seeing. You know, I've said to the trade desk multiple times, you know, my TED talk would be very short. Just don't be short anything, and you're a good trader in the last year. It's all it's taken. And I don't see anything that's going to stop that in the near future.
It was Aaron Curtis that made the comment about trucks. Any insight on the railways and what issues you may have moving corn or the whole of the industry might have in moving all kinds of agricultural products on the rails and by truck, I suppose, too, this winter?
Yeah, just kind of highlighting what Jordan said. I think it's a labor issue, right, on the truck side and on the rail side. So I think that's going to continue to be an issue. And I think, just in terms of movement, I think that's going to be a struggle as we move through the winter and early spring, just to get everything moved in a timely fashion, get everything moved to where it needs to be. And I think that's going to continue to kind of hang over just logistics in general here all winter, Todd. And it's more of a people say than an availability of freight.
Is it enough to depress price?
I don't think so. I think it's probably more of a effect maybe on basis or spreads. But as far as futures, I don't anticipate it having a big impact on that.
How much on basis?
Well, that's yet to be determined, right? I think right now the truck availability probably is more of a positive for near-term basis appreciation, just because the processor just can't get the grain to move where he needs to go, so he has to appreciate basis to try to entice more bushels to move. We saw that transportation having a big impact on the river, obviously, with what Hurricane Ida did when it took a big piece of the barge fleet out of action there for a few weeks' time, and that's starting to kind of calm down here a little bit with what I mentioned on barge freight, but hard to put numbers on it, Todd, but I think it's just something that at least the elevator system is mindful of in terms of being able to implement a merchandising plan based on the availability of freight. So it's fresh in mind to your grain merchandiser.
Yeah, one other follow-up. Does it mean that rail basis is hot while local basis could be... No, leave it in your bin at home?
It's probably the opposite, really. I mean, rail basis, if we look at Southeast rail values right now, they're pretty flat just because of the crop size that we've seen, like in the Delta. So the domestic processor, which would be more of a truck market, right, is probably seeing much firmer basis levels than what we're seeing into some of the rail markets that go out into the outer parts of the Midwest, right? So... But definitely going to be something that we can continue to keep an eye on, just in terms of are we going to have the available amount of people to move the grain to where we need to go in a timely manner, especially if we're looking at the balance sheet continuing to be possibly tighter. And we look at the May-July corn spread sitting here at, right around even money. So those are things, at least from the merchandising side, we've got to continue to consider.
Ellen Dearden, what have you been thinking about mostly lately? What's been top of your list of worries or of things that are really good for the marketplace?
Basis, and that ties right into transportation. I think that the basis is going to be doing the heavy lifting. It may not be as big a movement of the board, particularly on the bean side of things, but the basis is going to have to be active. Transportation is a major problem. We saw it here, locally, all fall, very difficult to find extra drivers or extra trucks.
So it means producers will be having to pay attention, particularly to their local bids, every day.
I think they should, on a normal basis, be looking at basis every day, but I haven't found a lot of believers. If farmers look at basis once a week, that's great.
Any comments, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I found it very interesting, for instance, whenever you were asking about, whether what it spelled, and you asked Aaron about that, whether they keep it in the bin or what they do. I've got a producer that actually is over there in Missouri between Columbia and Kansas City and was offered $6.15 for corn yesterday and for November and December. The JFM bid, Jan, Feb, March bid, was $5.89. And so, the people he was working with, they needed corn. They were hand to mouth. And so basis has been quite interesting. And, you know, you've seen, for instance, in our part of the world, you know, bids go from 5 over to 20 over one of the bigger processors in our neck of the woods with, you know, pushes up to 30 and 35 over, we're hearing. So, you know, I think the basis is certainly, as Ellen said, it's going to do quite a bit of heavy lifting. And I think that it just shows you that some of these folks are, I don't know that I want to call it running scared, but they're certainly showing that maybe they're not totally happy with what they've got booked so far. And, you know, obviously in our part of the world, harvest isn't too far from being over. So basis has definitely been one of those things that's been offering opportunities. Now, for a producer, you got to ask yourself, if you're getting a huge push this time of year, you know, the inclination as well, it's just a sign of things to come. I just keep telling people, though, absolutely, there could be some pretty exciting moments moving forward. But at the same time, someone offers you $6 for corn and you had, you know, some of the yields that we know people had this year. Let's not overcomplicate things too much.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. I'll start with you, please.
Continue to watch basis. It's a local situation, so you need to watch your basis in the elevators or the facilities that you deliver into. And I would recommend that you look at it more often than what you have been doing historically.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Yeah, generally friendly. The grains, wheat and corn here, not going to be straight up, but I think through the winter, I think it's going to be pretty well supported, especially in expense to soybeans. November 22 beans is a market I'd, at least on the futures side, be somewhat concerned about. If we have if Brazil weather continues to cooperate and we do add a few bean acres across the U.S. Next fall. So I'd keep an eye on November 22 beans if we get some sort of rally in that market.
Matt Bennett from agmarket.net.
Yeah, I think I agree with Aaron. I think anytime you can book this type of price level for beans, especially fresh on the heels of harvesting such a large crop, and we see what kind of yields we continue to be able to produce, pretty good, pretty tough to ignore those types of price levels. Whereas on corn, you know, I'm still not ready to get too aggressive. I'm like Aaron. I kind of think that you're going to have a fair amount of support there. And quite frankly, I think that you'll see this corn market have to stay strong enough that producers are going to be encouraged to go ahead and plant corn in the face of not knowing, for instance, what their input situation is, putting a lot more outlay out there to put the crop out as far as cash is concerned. And so I do think that this price level, while as we're already at 550, I'm not bearish in any way here for these 23 corn.
And from BioUrgia, Jordan Fife.
Yes, ethanol print today should be around 309. The last time ethanol was $3 was April 2nd, 2014, when it was $3.25. This is being caused by low inventory levels at the major pricing points across the U.S., both in Chicago and New York. Until we get logistical issues worked out, I think that we'll continue to see high prices on ethanol.
We'd like to thank our panelists for the day. They include Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Ellen Dearden, and Jordan Fife. Of course, Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. And you can listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.